You need to know a little bit about the life cycle of dragonflies to understand a recent paper published in the journal American Midland Naturalist.
They are living out their lives on the bottom of the river, and then when it's time to metamorphosize and turn into adults, and dragonflies will go directly from larvae to adults. So you will see them molt, and they will all of a sudden have wings, they dry out, and then they can fly.
Ryan Utes is assistant professor of water resources at Chatham University. We're walking on a trail along the Ohio River in Pittsburgh's north side. Utes is telling me how colleagues collected samples of dragonfly larvae during routine biomonitoring of the Ohio, near the point where Pittsburgh's three rivers meet.
They used a boat to trawl leaf packs out of the bottom of the river and haul up all of that organic matter. What they were out there for were fishes, but the people sampling had the good sense to preserve the invertebrates as well.
The dragonfly and smaller damselfly larvae, both of the order Odonata, were saved from the nets so they could be examined in a lab.
It's one of those happy circumstances that occasionally happen in science where we turned up some data that we weren't intending to find and then found something pretty cool.
To learn more about that, I jumped on a Zoom call with Ian Hart. He's an undergraduate at Chatham in the environmental science program and is actually the first name on the published paper.
I was really excited to just kind of take a look at all of them and see what was there.
The samples were taken in 2014 and 2019, and Hart was there for the very last day of trawling. Can you tell me about some of the species that were found?
So one interesting thing we saw, the species that was the most abundant in 2019 and in the overall study, was Stylurus notatus, also known as the elusive clubtail. It gets its name because as adults, it spends much of its life high in like forest canopies. And so it makes it really hard for us humans to actually study them. They're just always kind of out of our reach.
The researchers checked the conservation status of the 6 dragonfly species and the 1 damselfly species found using a public database. All were vulnerable somewhere. As for the elusive clubtail,
in Pennsylvania, it's actually vulnerable, but in other states like West Virginia, Indiana, Kentucky, it's like critically imperiled. And on the global scale, it was the only one that was considered vulnerable. And so we think that we found a lot of these maybe because they are like more accustomed to large, slow flowing rivers, and that this can kind of like show that they might not be as imperiled. It might just be that studying them as hard as adults, but because we are getting them in their larval stage, that we are actually being able to catalog more of them.
What conclusions did you draw from what you found?
We were expecting originally that we would find more odonates closer to the banks, as well as at shallower depths, because along the banks there's going to be more debris from trees and other things falling in. That kind of gives them a structured habitat to live in. And also deeper water tends to have less dissolved oxygen and less light to be able to hunt for prey, because they are extremely successful predators. But we found that there's only very slightly more found towards the banks. So this kind of shows us that they are able to kind of use these mid-channel resources in these like large modified rivers. And this might be an explanation of why we're actually still seeing them persisting in this environment.
Back at the trail, I explore this idea of a modified river with Ryan Utes. This section of the trail where we're walking is pretty lush, but it's also lined with warehouses. We can hear commercial trucks on the busy road across the river and heavy machinery.
The urban setting that we're walking through right now, I think, makes a good point of the paper, because you wouldn't expect to see species that are of conservation concern in a place like this, because it's clearly dominated by humans. In rivers like the Ohio, the sheer number of dams and locks upstream mean that the way the river behaves is radically changed, and the changes make it behave a lot more like a lake.
Utes says the locks and dams on the rivers here change the natural flow, how the rivers rise and fall.
Where we're standing right now would be the floodplain that in historic times would have flooded maybe 2 or 3 times a year. And when that happens, it releases nutrients that are stored on the floodplain, and a lot of organisms would have come onto the floodplain to breed and feed. And they no longer can do that because, as you can see, we're surrounded by buildings and roads. And so we've tamed the river to not flood. And that has large consequences for many, many species that once inhabited the river or are just barely hanging on.
Including dragonflies?
Probably including some species of dragonflies.
Are dragonflies and damselflies picky about where they live? What do they need?
It depends on the species. So some damsel and dragonfly species definitely have some very specific habitat requirements. And others are generalists, and they could live anywhere. What they need, number one, they're all predators, so they need other invertebrates to feed on. And some of the larger ones in certain families can also feed on small species of fish and tadpoles. Yeah. Go on YouTube and check out some dragonfly feeding videos. You'll be pretty impressed.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. They can be kind of gruesome, too, because they have these big mouth parts that project out far in front of them where they impale their prey and then bring them back to their mouth.
Why study dragonflies and damselflies?
Well, it's not as though they are unique among other groups of aquatic insects, but aquatic insects can tell us a lot about the ecological health of a ecosystem. So aquatic insects are very, very diverse, much more diverse than fish, and so scientists use them as gauges to see how healthy an ecosystem is, whether a water body is impaired or is in a pristine state. Their diversity tells us something about how healthy the Ohio River is, and while the Ohio River is very changed from what it once was, the fact that we found at least some diversity of Odonata in the Ohio River, including species that are supposed to be river dwellers, is somewhat good news for the Ohio. It's never going to be what it was, but at least it's able to conserve some of the things that it maybe once did before humans really made the river a different ecosystem than what it was.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Ryan Utes is Assistant Professor of Water Resources at Chatham University. And thanks to Ian Hart, too. He'll be a senior at Chatham. You can find a link to the paper they published with colleagues about dragonflies and damselflies on the Ohio River and all of our stories about wildlife at alleghenyfront.org/wildpa.